Okay, so this is the real title, not conclusions. Thank you for inviting me here. I'll be talking about some proposals concerning generalizations of mirror symmetry to manifolds which are not Calabi-Yau, and the impedance of fluxes. This is my name, and these are the two papers on which this talk is mainly based on. One you have already heard maybe too much about. The other one you probably have already. The other one is by myself, and there will also be a quick mention of some work in progress with Amir Kashanipo. So I'll start with some motivational part. Probably, I mean, as such, full of life. And all the idea is to use forms rather than a symmetric tensor to describe gravity, just because they are in more ways more manageable than a symmetric tensor. And concretely, in six dimensions, we can consider the notion of a C3 structure, which is defined either by a spinor with a zero, so more often in the seminar by a pair of real two-form and a complex three-form, which satisfies these two equations. Well, it wouldn't be very useful if it weren't that it determines a metric, just because a metric is an O6 structure, and a C3 is a subgroup of O6. Phrased in a more familiar, maybe, language, you can still use, even though here I'm not yet using anything, I'm not imposing anything about the integrability, you can still use the formula that you know and love, connecting the fundamental two-form to the metric. And, just to make you just a little more familiar with this, if you are familiar with the G2, you know, you will remember that the metric can be determined from the tree form with a funny trilinear formula. You can think of this fact that SC3 determines an O6 structure as a reduction of that formula. So it's a bit maybe more explicit, but can be written in this case as well. So, okay, this is mathematics. You may think that I'm, you know, not to the point. But the real point is that is whether we can really use this fact, this SC3 structure, to write theories of gravity. And, to go some way towards this answering this question, we can consider it useful to think of this SC3 structure, of this pair, of each half of this pair separately. Turns out that each of them has some well-defined meaning, some also useful meaning. If from one side, if you consider the complex preform, it determines an almost complex structure. And since I'm not yet considering any metric here because it's only one half of the SC3 structure, I should call it a GLC structure. From the other side, the other half is, which is an antisymmetric two-form, well, a two-form, defines just by definition what is the SP group, an SP6 R structure. And if I put them together, these two halves manage to give me an SC3 structure. Well, also, this wouldn't be, again, that useful if you weren't that each half has a separate dynamics, which you know very well. They are respectively the B model and the A model. The B model, actually, to be well defined. So far, I didn't have any differential property. Here, if I want to consider the B model, I have to impose that d omega equals zero, which, as I will sketch later on, means that the manifold is complex. And if I want to consider the A model, I have to impose that the two-form is closed, which, by definition, is a symplectic manifold. So mirror symmetry connects these two. Well, you may think mirror symmetry is actually something which is defined for Calabi-Yau's. Actually, already Koncevich in his ICM talk, or, I mean, that was a summarizing of ongoing new paradigm. Consider mirror symmetry as just being sending a complex manifold into a symplectic manifold, so not necessarily either to Calabi-Yau's. Since then, this philosophy has appeared in physics many times. I will not do justice to these instances because this is just an introduction. And I'll go on with my own direction, which is to see if they are actually realized in supergravity, if I can actually realize that all the idea in supergravity. You may think, well, for many years, focus has been mostly on the Calabi-Yau case, and this is because if you impose preserved supersymmetry and you have only the metric field on, your supersymmetry transformations impose pretty soon that the spin is covariantly constant. And this implies this is by definition a Calabi-Yau. Well, with fluxes, it turns out, as we'll see more in detail later on, that this is waved. The manifold is no longer Calabi-Yau. Still, you can say something simple. Here's a simplistic table. Of course, you can go much deeper in classifying flux compactifications. You have seen those of you who were there during Ruben's seminar. There was a complicated table, much more complicated than this one, with many subcases for 2A and 2B. And, well, informally, those subcases essentially are, you can think of them as corresponding to allowed brains. The difference, though, is that here we are really changing the manifolds. The condition, we first studied the conditions for what the manifold should be, and then there's no reason, you know, that it's not that we take a Calabi-Yau and then we change the metric in such a way that it's still complex. No, we can take whatever complex manifold, the three tensor three, whatever you want, and then whatever symplectic manifold on the other side. And here, okay, two examples of this informal correspondence that I was mentioning. So, well, it can be made more than informal, but I won't elaborate on this. What I really want to use of that informal correspondence is that, well, if we consider brains on Calabi-Yau, mirror symmetry is actually very well understood thanks to Mike, who's here, to many other people. Again, there are many omitted references there. And, well, I don't want to scare you. Here is a table of several points. A couple of points of the correspondence which has been established there. The brains on one side, on the beam on the side, are holomorphic submanifolds, and on the A side, they are special Lagrangian. And these two correspond to each other nicely, as shown by, for example, Lunk, Yao, and Zaslow. Well, here, sorry, on this entry, I had forgotten an exponential B field, which is actually important. But never mind, the important part here for the rest is the green part. So on one side, you have the special part of the special Lagrangian condition, which is this one. And on the other side, you have the nonlinear equations that Ruben was mentioning, along with Marigno, Moro, and Stoming, you have derived some time ago. Which are equations which live on a holomorphic brain. And it has been shown that they correspond nicely to each other under mirror symmetry. Something very similar happens for central charges. It's very well understood and it can be used very practically how the central charges of brains correspond to each other. And again, you see that on one side you have this funny exponential of the symplectic two form, and on the other side you have the complex tree form. Why am I mentioning this? Well, the question, since I was saying that actually my focus is on flux compactifications, and then been telling you that there is this correspondence between allowed manifolds for flux compactifications and brains, I want to ask if we can, so on the brain side, we have seen that there is this exchange between E to the I simplistic form and tree form. To characterize directly, to characterize more directly the flux compactifications, so far this hasn't really entered. I've been simply mentioning symplectic and complex condition. And whether there is still mirror symmetry, which exchange them. We'll see that we'll go some way along seeing that the proper conceptual home of this question should be the recently developed generalized complex geometry by Hitchin, Gualtieri, Cavalcanti, many others by now. And, well, also, the differential geometric side of that question has been discussed during Ruben's seminar, although I will maybe in a less detailed way review the results again. Another question that you can ask, and indeed during Ruben's seminar has been asked many times, is what happens to the topological data? How is it? Ruben's recipe was where, in which differential geometric class shall I find, shall I look for a mirror to a given manifold? But maybe prior to that, you should ask the question, in which topology this manifold, this candidate mirror symmetric manifold should have. And I'll try to answer this question. I told you that this introduction is full of lies. Also, the whole seminar is full of lies. It's been an old dream of mine, and I hope sometimes I can answer, or we can answer, how to incorporate this non-geometrical stuff in this generalized complex geometry setting. Certainly, it sounds very similar. You have, as I will show later, T plus T star. In this formalism, and in T plus T star, ODD is the central object, so this non-geometrical stuff looks very similar. However, I have done no progress in that direction, so I will completely ignore this, and it's a grave omission on my part. Thank you for pointing this out, and maybe we can talk later. So, well, here are a bunch of tough questions. Actually, I won't be answering really the general question, but I'll show you which proposals are on the market without proving them. But I hope at least to clarify what are the tough issues. And these are in general tough mathematical questions, but at least we'll see some examples. It will become more concrete. All right, after this, here's the plan for the rest of this talk. A little bit of animation. It's only once. So, well, the rest of the talk is roughly divided in three parts, red, green, and blue. In the first, we'll be considering, there will be this classification that I promised you, even though I won't go into much detail, of n equals some compactifications, and we'll see how this generalized complex geometry is naturally suggested. The second part is a bit of a transition between first and third, is to put the results of the first in a bigger picture, because there we will actually not consider necessarily n equals some vector, but we'll see how they fit into a paradigm, I would say, that which is being developed, which is actually all SE3 compactifications should be thought of as n equals to theories, not necessarily with unbroken supersymmetry, hence the spontaneous supersymmetry breaking. And I will also mention a worry which you could have, and from which I will save you, about this picture being disrupted by quantum effects. Otherwise, all the rest of this seminar is hideously classical. And anyway, the second part will help us introduce the third part about the topological questions that I asked a moment ago. All right, so here for the third part. The first part is this classification of LCT compactifications. It's essential in this paper with Gragna, Petrini, Minassin. I missed the alphabetical order, sorry. And okay, so this is the question which I asked during the introduction, whether this LCT structure, which is, you may look at it as a reformulation of metric, something more special than metric, but still, can actually be used practically to rewrite gravity in terms of it. Well, something which helps us is that we can look at the other picture in which LCT structure can be defined just by very simply by the internal spinor. You can pick one chirality, the other will follow by complex conjugation. And well, the fastest way to see forms emerging is actually to the filtering without. So usually the symplectic form and the complexity form are seen as bilinears. For this is essentially the same, but for technical reasons, well, not only technical reasons, but also aesthetical. It's preferable actually to consider directly the tensor products of the spinor with its dagger or with its transverse. And well, here I'm just applying the usual field formulas, and on the right-hand side, these are not really the forms, as you can imagine, because here there are two spinor indices left free, but they're friends in the Clifford algebra. For example, here this, you take the dxm, dxn, dxp piece of the definition of the complex tree form, and you turn it into a anti-symmetrized gamma matrix. Well, okay, so here, in a sense, so we are working with the bispinors or Clifford algebra representatives of the forms. Something which is also suggestive of the fact that this is useful is that there exists, fortunately, so in most cases in which you will find supergravity transformations of type 2 theories, they will look like a mess. There will be factors to remember. Here, if you do some trick, actually there is a formulation as far as at least supergravity transformations are concerned that allows you to put the whole Ramon-Ramon part into one single bispinor, which is the boxed one. And this way, for example, practically you don't need to remember -8, -12. But not only this is not only a curiosity. Using the fact that all our objects are natural in Clifford algebra, we can go on. We have two natural sets now of bispinors, the Ramon-Ramon one and the ones provided by the geometry. And there are natural combinations which we can use to rewrite essentially all supergravity formulas. Now I'm skipping many details. This is just to give you an idea of what's going on, that you can work at a bispinor level without ever here bothering about the single individual, for example, the single individual two form. So this exponential has a one omega, omega squared, omega cubed. You don't need to bother about those separately. And well, now the ideally, I would show to you all the steps which have gone from A to B here, but I felt that in the previous two seminars there were enough details about that, and it's not really the point in the seminar. So Here again, I'll show you this table. By reminding you also that complex and symplectic are possibly defined in these two ways, just by closure of the two. Well, here I could also have put e to the ij, but more in the spirit of the present talk. Let me also remind you that this here we are simply rephrasing or improving G-structure techniques developed over the last, I don't know, 3 years by Meniotov. And also let me acknowledge an imprecision that I've been we keep actually on doing. Actually, complex is not d omega equals 0, but it's the 2-2 part of d omega is 0. One way of this arrow you can easily check, because if the manifold were complex, of course the d of omega, which omega set a 0 form, would be only 3-1. So it can't have any 2-2 part. It turns out that also the converse is true. If d omega has no 2-2 part, then the manifold is complex. This has been some detail sketched by Ruben. See, they kept on forward referring to me, and I keep saying that they have already explained. So the question here, since I reminded you of the old picture by Kuncievich, you may look at this table and feel worried, because, all right, this part here is nice because symplectic and complex would seem to go to each other under a mirror symmetry. But what about this part? Wouldn't it be supposed to be the same as the upper columns? Is this really compatible with what mirror symmetry is supposed to be? Well, it turns out that after thinking a while about these questions, we have found something which is found several explanations of this. Essentially, they all had to do with the B field. Let me start by one point of view. This is the following. We have rewritten necessary, so using supergravity transformations, so the equations are imposed by preservation of supersymmetry. We have written necessary conditions for the geometry to allow a flux quantification. Minkowski, here. It's not. It's certainly possible to generalize it. I haven't wanted to do it, but just because of laziness. I understand that, I mean, some later papers have gone some way along answering that, but I haven't really. It seems to be a bit of a different language, more the usual G-structure thing. It can be done. So, okay, this gives me an occasion to say that. Again, this is not really the point, but this is the difference with the usual G-structure stuff is, on one side, that this is the most general, but that you could have done also with the G-structure methods. This modification of the G-structure methods was meant to more to emphasize this, to explore this, whether there is any mirror symmetry phenomenon. And also, as a byproduct, it gave what I'm going to show you now. Which is, okay, in 2A, we wrote these equations. Which you see e to the I omega and omega appear, and the same operator appears up and down, and one of them is annihilated by the operator, the other is not. This stuff of G, this function stuff of G, you don't want to know right now because it would spoil the beauty of this slide, but what I can tell you is that it contains a single bispinner, and also what I can tell you is that it's the same with a couple of signs being changed as what appears into B. And otherwise, everything is the same in this equation as in 2A. You see that that the one that that now is annihilated by this operator is omega, no longer e to the I omega. I'm sorry, a point of notation during Mariana's and Ruben's seminars. Little omega was called J. So this is also, in some way, it's reasonable because we showed before that into B, for example, all the all the possible quantifications are complex, and hence omega is closed. It can also be shown from this equation into B, but of course this equation has more content. Well, so it's a priori non-trivial that the same operator should appear in all four of the spots, that here there is a zero, that here there is a zero. Now you may ask me, what is this operator? What is this bullet that I keep showing here? And here's the definition. This DXMN is meant to be DXM wedge DXN. So what is it? This piece is one contraction and two wedges, and this piece is three contraction. The first piece could be familiar to some because it's what you would get if you simply replace consider the effect of replacing the usual covariant derivative by the covariant derivative torsion in the supergravity transformations, but also everywhere. However, H only, this is the way I like to think of this equation, although they simply come out in a sense. The interpretation is a posteriori. The reason that you have also an extra piece is that H not only appears in string theory as a torsion, but also, for example, it appears in the De Latino, and there's no particular reason to call it a torsion. Actually, this is simplistic because the contribution from the De Latino also renormalizes this coefficient. But it's one way to think about it. Of course, still, I haven't explained the mystery of this operator. What does it really mean? Is there anything to learn from this slide? Is it really just a coincidence? Well, one thing that I want to say is that maybe we should start from the objects on which this operator acts more than the operator itself. And, well, why? First of all, because there is already some precooked interpretation for them, which is this in the framework of this generalized compact geometry by Hitching, Gualtieri, and other students of Hitching. And here is my quick review, which will not be as careful or as nice as the lectures which have been given by Mariana and Gualtieri in previous occasions. Let us start from the moral way of reasoning. Essentially, I want to use t plus t star rather than the tangent. So t is the tangent bundle, t star is the cotangent. Why? Well, one reason being that on t plus t star you have a natural metric which is not actually a metric, it's just a natural pairing between a form and the vector. From the point of view of structure, what we can say is that the same way as usually, at the beginning of this talk I've been talking about, I have been introducing and commenting about the notion of a C3 structure, here on T plus T star it's natural to consider the notion of SC3 comma 3 structure. This is just because the metric becomes this more extended pairing that I just mentioned. And the amazing, well, for us, the nice thing is that e to the I omega and big omega each defines an SC3 comma 3 structure. So we start seeing that maybe there is something we can use in this formalism. More generally, what reduces the structure group of T plus T star to SC3 comma 3 is called the pure spinor. I want to really introduce what it is again because it has been extensively talked about. But this is all you need to know essentially. So I will be calling them in the sequel these two pure spinors. These are not the same as Berkowitz, if anyone is thinking, because here we are thinking about the Clifford algebra of this guy. So together, if I consider them together, they define what's called SC3 times SC3 structure on T plus T star, and This is not a surprise because if I consider just a little omega and a big omega, they will consider an SAT structure on T alone. But I want to say that this way of considering two pure spinors with certain compatibility conditions is a better way of think of an SAT structure on T still. And why? Because with this point of view, you have a more mirror symmetrical definition. And it makes much more reasonable to think that now there could be, even without any integrability, without any Calabi-Yau condition around, it could be reasonable that since you can think of an SAT structure as a pair of two pure spinors, maybe there is a mirror symmetry which changes the two pure spinors. And, well, so far, I mean, it's easy to say what you want, but you have to compare with the differential conditions. For those, the generalized complex geometry proposes to use what's called the Courant bracket rather than the usual Lie bracket. And if I give you the definition, most probably you will forget it in 10 minutes. One way of, but we'll see in a second a better way to think about it. So once you have this Courant bracket rather than the Lie bracket, remember that out of the Lie bracket you could define the Ninus tensor for a complex structure. And not very different from that is the fact that I can now define with this Courant sort of Ninus for a pure spinor. And imposing that equal to zero is the same as imposing that a pure spinor be closed. The Courant bracket is a bit mysterious if I write down the explicit definition, but the way to really remember it is this form. You see, this is like an operator. This is like A commutator with D and the whole thing commutator with B. You see, there are all these four combinations, and then anti-symmetrized. What are A and B? A and B are whatever operator on forms. For example, so once you have any operator on forms, the bracket gives you another operator on forms. And this is an operator on forms sounds to abstract, but actually you can take, for example, a contraction with the vector and or a wedge with one form. And something which is more than a curiosity is that actually I can use this formula is in some way universal. For example, if I consider vectors only as operators on forms and I apply this formula, actually what I will get is our old friend Lie bracket. I can use multi-vectors and I will get what's called the Ninus bracket or Schouten. So for us, once again, what's important, so since a pure spinor has to be closed if it wants to be integrable, remember, maybe I should have put it here, remember, compare with what we were saying, that a complex can be also written down in first approximation in this form, and symplectic. These are two ways of rewriting complex and symplectic condition. And the importance of this bracket is simply that the forms that the operators that annihilate a pure spinor are closed under this Courant bracket. Now, you may very well during this mathematical part, you may very well I got in distracted. Why are we considering this? Well, the point is that in general, you can consider other differentials, other brackets which don't have D, this operator D, but other differentials that are square to zero, and you still have lots of nice properties about the bracket which results. Well, another example, so just a second, which looks very natural in Sentio, is that you could guess, okay, let's take a two form. Now I can send all the operators, I can define an automorphism on all the operators in this way, and naturally you will see that the operator, the differential d will go to d plus h wedge. But for us, we had this. We don't really get this. So here's where I wanted to get. The generalized compact geometry is nice in that it gives a proper place to e to the omega and the big omega, but unfortunately, it gives a different operator. The question, for example, since I showed you that in that formalism, it's important that the new operator, whatever you have square to zero, the question would be, does this square to zero? Unfortunately, it doesn't. And this calls for some mathematics which hasn't been explored so far. Now, I can simply quickly mention that we have also a version which is not yet published for in seven dimensions. It looks a bit nicer, but it lacks equally an explanation. And okay, this is in seven dimensions, but still it's a definition of SE3 times SE3 structure on T plus T star in seven dimensions. There is also a worksheet approach to all these matters. It's an occasion to advertise myself. And now let's go to the quickly to this second part, which is actually a bit of a hinge before going to the last part about topology. So here is the table which already Ruben showed to you. The preserved, so if you consider n equals some vector, you get with this, well, I call the twisted generalized because it's not really generalized Calabi-Yau. And you're familiar with the fact that n equals 2 preserved is actually SE3 holonomy. So there we saw some evidence of mirosymmetry. Now what I want to argue is that actually the integrability of these differential conditions weren't that important. And we may very well consider a generic SE3 structure manifold. What's the relevance of these two physics? Well, it's to be understood in terms of spontaneously broken n equals 2. In other words, if you compactify on a manifold SE3 structure, you should obtain an action which has still n equals 2, even though there are possibly no preserved vector. So, helped by this, we can simply consider SE3 structure manifolds with no a priori particular differential property. After all, e to the omega and big omega are simply algebraic. And we can attempt to define mirosymmetry in this case as well by considering still n equals 2 actions. We can ask whether the n equals 2 actions on the two manifolds are equal or not. Well, let me remind you quickly, I had to do it, that in the two Calabi-Yau, in the Calabi-Yau case, there are each 1-1 vector multiples and this number of hypermultiples. In classical approximation, the dynamics is given by these two quantities. And the important point that I want to stress for the last part is that fluxes, so without fluxes, or if I don't generalize the Calabi-Yau to a more general manifold, this dynamics here is just an n equals 2 supergravity. In presence of fluxes, the theory gets modified by gauging procedure. So, quick example. In case we have H, the periods of H are certain numbers. Let me denote the moduli coming from the tree form in this way. And then it turns out that just the derivative in four dimensions of this modulus gets modified in this way. You see, it's a kind of gauging. Xi is absent on this side. It's like gauging a translation, not really a rotation. That's why Xi is absent here. And this is the translation I'm talking about. This is what happens when you have a flux. It's natural to say that H is a kind of moment or momentum map on the space of all omegas. This has been known for a while. Beyond perturbation theory means?
Well, in the other instance, on the
break. Oh, that's next slide. Next slide, I will answer your question. So it's less customary to think of also lack of Calabi-Yau-ness as a moment map, but this also has been advocated. I should say that okay, maybe more precisely, you should think if you know a bit of n equals to gauge supergravities, the quantities which also Mariana has shown, which are called n equals to prepotentials, are mathematically simply hypermoment map, as she also mentioned. So, okay, we are in 2A. Lack of being symplectic also induces a gauging. Well, I put here mathematical reference and future physical reference. Now, you may very well ask, and this has been asked during the Rubin seminar, what's the integral part now of, for H, I knew what were the numbers, so what about the lack of integrability of the symplectic structure? Louis Waldman and collaborators have proposed something which I will summarize roughly here. We'll come back to it at the end, at the very end, just to expand this lack of simplicity as a triform in a basis of triforms which I call massive harmonics. They are not really harmonics, they are massive eigenforms of the Laplacian. Okay, here you can expand them and the coefficients of the expansion would be related to the gaugings in the same way as the periods of H were related to the gauging in the other case. And now a claim is that that these two types of gauging are mixed by mirror symmetry. See, this is still a manifestation of what we saw. Maybe you had the impression that I didn't really, at some point I asked, how is it possible that symplectic and complex don't seem to really go to each other? And because in the table there was a row which was completely complex. And I showed you that was meant to be an answer, a partial answer to that, that actually H comes in the conditions. And when you also include H, you have those formulas that I was showing that are mirror symmetric. That's an indication of the fact that geometry, and it's an indication, we knew it already, that geometry, so from T-duality we could have imagined, let's say, that geometry and H get mixed. Together with Ruben, we have shown the formula that he also mentioned. It shows how the lack of integrability of the symplectic structure and H mix. But on that, I won't comment any further. All this is meant to make you curious about the topological part. But before going to that, I will answer. Thanks, actually. So you could think, quantum corrections spoil all this. But I'm sorry, on this I'll be quick. It wasn't really meant, it was meant as an intermezzo. So, well, you may ask, and you have asked, the directions to be gauged have to be isometries. So instantons could very well lift them, and how? Well, look at the contribution by an instanton. The action will have this term. And here there is a dependence on the xi a's. So you would say this isometry is not really there. However, in presence of H, well, the tuple tells us this. In other words, if H wraps the a certain cycle, then there is a non-zero tuple for whatever f you want to put on a brain living on that, on a hypothetical brain living on that cycle. And this imposes, so there's this tuple unless this condition is satisfied. So essentially, H through the cycle on which you are putting an instant on which you are supposing an instant on is there has to be trivial. But now look at what the isometry we would like to be gauging does on the term which is on the exponential here, on this instanton contribution. Gives this. Well, that is zero. So, moral of the story, the flux protects already all the isometries that it wants to gauge. In other words, you first decide what flux you want to put, then you do your thing computations, and you will see that a posteriori was well, you will see that the isometries that you wanted to be there in order to describe the system in terms of n equals 2 supergravity, gauged supergravity, are actually there. I'm happy that you're agreeing. I'm eager to discuss this with you later, but now we have to move to the final extravaganza about the topological part. Okay, so I told you quickly about what the proposal by Louis Waldman and collaborators was about what the gaugings become, how the gaugings are expressed in terms of geometry. And now I will try to prove whatever they were saying and to actually move forward using essentially intuition from triduality. Let's see. From triduality, there is a phenomenon which is standard, which is that the chunk class of say an S1 vibration is exchanged with H contracted on the fiber. This is a two-form, and this is a two-form, so they can be exchanged. And if you're not familiar, believe me. So, well, quick bottom line of that expression, consequence of this, is that non-trivial vibration with no B field goes in general into a trivial, it can go into a trivial one with some B field. Now, this is all fine and good, but these are circle vibrations. So maybe you can study nil-manifolds, simple cases, but we actually want to look at stuff such as, so let's say that I have, you could have thought, if I'm really claiming that there is a mirror symmetry for all the cases, in particular the simplest one you can think of is a Calabi-Yau with a B field. This has, again, no vacua, it has an Hilbert supersymmetry, but I was arguing before that we should consider that anyway. It will have a potential in the gauge supergravity approach. So we want to compare this with a potential on another side. To some extent this has been done here, but I will do it from another perspective. We can help ourselves with what Stominger, Yao, and Zaslov suggested. It's true that it's their conjecture that all Calabi-Yaus are vibrations. In this form, the fiber is T3, the base is S3, as explained by the amoebas that I think Gukov has shown, or by other arguments. This, you may raise your hand and ask, look, how is it possible? If I start from the product, I will have this Betti numbers. Here, so what are these Betti numbers? Here I put the fiber, here I put the base. Now, so to really have the Betti numbers of the full thing, you should sum in this notation along this. So, for example, a two-form can be a two-form on the base, one on the base, one on the fiber, or two in the fiber. It turns out that the vibration, so a vibration cannot modify this picture that much, this cohomology that much. So you may think, look, how can I construct a Calabi-Yau this way? Well, the answer is that there are singular fibers which alter significantly what we just saw. And, well, here's a cartoon of what happens. So, okay. So, let's think about the quintet. You can think of the S3 in the base as having 10 of these faces shown here, 10 of these triangles, to form a three dimension which you can't visualize because you don't see the four direction. Pentahedron. And along each of these 10 two faces, there are, you have to imagine a honeycomb picture like this. What are these lines? These are the lines in which the fibers are degenerating. So, for example, here, outside of these black lines, the fiber is simply T3, and here on, I have depicted what they become once you go to the, what the general fiber becomes once you get to the singular loci here. So this is singular, this is more singular, looks like a cation, and so on. And this is what happens under T-duality. This has been studied by Gross and other authors. Also the result of what the cohomology looks like has been shown. You may very well ask, well, what are these? I'll tell you in a second. Just a comment, what makes this significantly different from the previous case is that the neutrality defibration for the Calabiau is not really given by the by chunk classes. There aren't any non-trivial in that case, but by monodromies. So by how this T3 glues to itself when you go around one of the legs of this honeycomb. All right, so you see here in the Calabiau, we see that we are not really in the case of the simple nil manifolds or some vibrations. Now let me explain quickly what those mysterious groups were. Here is another cartoon. One of the groups in that array looked like this, and what it really means is that here's an example. This is a tricycle on the Calabiau. On the S3 base, it looks like a path from in this form, and on the singular fibers, it looks like this. Here it's this face, and here it becomes just of a one dimension lower. This is the trick why here will look like it's not a cycle. It has boundary, namely these two points, but due to the fact that they shrink on the end points, it's still a cycle. So this is what this guy really means. And its mirror, you can see that it becomes a two cycle just because the mirror here of something which has dimension 2 becomes dimension 1. All right. When we add B field, we don't really have a chunk class. I can't apply the simplistic picture that I showed you at the beginning just because, well, it can be a chunk class because H2 of the base vanishes. It's S3. But still, I was able to define some kind of twisted chunk class. I just twisted. I put twisted whenever I don't know what word to use because it didn't exist in mathematics before. And it leaves indeed in one of these strange weird groups. Okay, what it really means, I tried to explain it here in a picture. For details, you refer to my paper. You cut a neighborhood of this path, or one of the paths, and since you don't want to see this neighborhood has to end somewhere, so I made it as a rugby ball neighborhood. And now, imagine to cut this rugby ball along several transversal slices. Here you see a disc, and the exterior of the disc, which I didn't depict because it wouldn't interfere with the rest of the picture. So now, on each point of the boundary of the disc, you have a T3. And imagine simply to glue this T3. So you take the original quintic, and now you do this operation to it. You cut this rugby ball with the fiber on it, and now you re-glue it after having twisted the T3s. So glue them. You glue them back to the T3s along this the boundary of this rugby ball after having done this operation. Believe me, this is very similar to the Chang class, but it's, it takes into account monodromies, it's a new definition. I talked to a mathematician, it looks like it makes sense. There are subtleties. And I claim that this defines the topology, so I have actually arguments to show that this is enough to nail down completely the topology of what's a mirror of, say, the quintic to the Calabi-Yau flux. So, see, in a sense, this is an explicit example. It's an easy example, but yeah, easy depending on your thesis. But it's at least an explicit example of what a mirror of in this generalized setting should look like. Let me look at what happens to the cohomology, because it will be instructive, and this is the slide. Well, so I haven't told you, but the arrays I've been showing so far, which gave the cohomology along the fiber and along the base, are actually what are called spectral sequences, Lyrae spectral sequences. You don't need to know that. What you need to know is that the presence of H, sorry, the modification that I've done, so the mirror of H, what it does is that it introduces some arrows which kill both what comes before them and what comes after them. So, hence the result. See here, it killed one of them over that is to say that this number decreased by one. And you see that here now there is a zero, and here now there is a torsion, not really a zero. What is this n? It's related to the period. It's the same, actually. It's the period of H on the mirror side. So, in a way, here's a geometrical, topological way of seeing the mirror of the period of H on the other side. And I hope that this will be... So, see, from d omega, we couldn't really extract an integer because we can't take its periods, but I claim that by looking at cohomology and looking whether you have torsions, you can decide you can see this integer. The relation of these two, the omega, is interesting because so Ruben has been talking about the differential geometrical part. I've been talking about the topology part in this here. Well, here's it's a baby case of what happened here for those who have done this before. S3 or length spaces lose respect to S2 to S1 when you add the Chang class, some cohomologies. So Ruben has been talking about the differential geometric part, and I've been talking about the topology part, but the connection between the two is very interesting. And it's actually a tough problem. So people don't know if I give to a mathematician a certain topological manifold, they can tell me whether there is an SU3 structure or not, but they can't tell me if this, for example, if the almost complex structure is integrable. Is there any almost complex structure which is integrable on S6? That has been, for example, a problem for a long time. Since okay, good. Go ahead. I think I can. I hope I can.
So, okay.
Is it this one?
Yeah. So you have some flux through this compact three cycle.
Yeah. So where was this? I haven't.
So the B field through the B3 fiber isn't single valued, is it? I mean, it has.
Oh, I've taken H, if you are worried about the non-geometry, I've taken H in such a way as to avoid the problems as. Such as the non-geometric. I've taken actually H here. It's a bit cavalier. So H, I've taken it to have two components on the base and one on the fiber. Because. Yes. It's all compact, yeah?
It's not through that. It's not. You have some three spheres.
So this is the mirror. This is the mirror of what happens if I put H. I should have maybe given more details on what H is to begin with, but I figured this.
Okay. Which, where is H pointing?
Okay, good. There were already too many pictures. So here H on this side is has two directions. So this is the base, right? Okay, this part is the base. So now H has two components which are transverse to this, to the path, okay? And one which is transverse to the. So it's a Poincaré dual of this cycle, okay? Yeah, I'm sorry. See, people keep asking. I mean, much less than 5 minutes actually was done. What happens to the disappearing cycles? So this is my last comment. When I told you that the proposal by Louis et al. Was expanding in terms of maximum harmonics, I was oversimplifying them. I mean, what they really needed was some linear answers for what happens. So some answers for what happens when you act with the differential on the forms. Now, if you were on a Calabi-Yau, you would have that all your forms are actually closed. Here, since this is no longer a Calabi-Yau, and you want to keep actually, you will have some massive modes. You don't want only to include the cohomology. This is not enough. So they have, by hand, they had introduced some answers like this, which wasn't really cohomology. You see, I mean, if I now take cohomology, some of this will simply disappear. And using this, I was able to prove it, essentially. Actually, it's more or less the same as this picture. If you want to think of this picture by reversing it as a close relative of the Hodge diamond, and you see that two forms, one of the two forms goes away, one of the three forms goes away, another three form goes away here. The same happens in this formula. Well, maybe it looks complicated, but it's really the same as what happened. I'm sorry, the E2? 0102, sorry. 0102 means what? 0, 1 being this and 0, 2 being this? Okay, this? Ah, those are, oh, and then these are, yeah, titles. They should read zeros. Both this and this. I'm sorry, cut and paste incident. So, what these are required for is really to make Kaluza-Kahn reduction for gaugings. Now, this was a toy example. I told you from the beginning I would consider an example. What you could very well ask is what a more general picture that has been motivated by supergravity, really by supergravity arguments. Conjectures as to how to write down what's in general here. Essentially, they would replace this, which has only one index, with a matrix, also with an index on three form valued one. But here, the given really what I did, I see that I can only accommodate naturally for one index, which is good from one side because I was supposed to have the mirror of Calabi-Yau reflux, but which also opens a new perspective on how do we want to make sense of this. So the answer they were doing works very well, but I don't have the slightest idea what set of topology in that case, and it would be interesting to see it. So, okay, conclusions. Not much needs to be said. The differential geometry, I hoped I aroused your curiosity as to what's the differential geometry of the differential structure that we uncovered in supersymmetric compactifications. Also, I think it's very interesting to study deep questions about what mirror symmetry should look like. I think the intuition from spontaneously broken supersymmetry is clearly helpful and should be investigated further. And finally, okay, so I think last part especially of this talk, I hope shows that there is a lot to be learned about how topology and differential geometry talk to each other. Potentially, string theory. I think string theory has the potential to answer lots of open questions there, or even forgotten questions in mathematics. Thank you.